Safe and Sound, New Zealand's only animal rights radio show, broadcasting from Free FM in Hamilton and syndicated across New Zealand. Our aim at Safe and Sound is to provide a platform for people who share our vision of a kinder, gentler, and more sustainable world. We promote a vegan ethic primarily because veganism doesn't require that animals are denied their right to life for our food, but also because it helps the environment, and in particular, global warming. If you haven't already seen the documentary Cowspiracy, then hop on YouTube and watch it. That's Cow, Cowspiracy. This is a great doco and it sets out the environmental impacts of animal agriculture very well. Here in New Zealand, our waterways have been hugely impacted by animal agriculture, largely dairying, as we heard well-known environmentalist Dr. Mike Joy say in the first part of this interview last week. Mike advocates a move away from animal agriculture and denies that our economy will suffer as a result. Let's listen now to part two of the interview that Sarah Oliver and I conducted with him.
So what would you say to the kind of comments that come out of, well, New Zealand will go broke if we stop growing animals?
Well, I just think it's just crazy, though. It's as if we couldn't do anything else. You know, if somebody's come along 20 years ago or something and said, oh, if we stop doing something, we'll go broke. Well, you know, if we stop manufacturing, we'll go broke. Well, we've stopped manufacturing. We haven't gone broke. It's that statement is kind of implying that we can only do one thing, and that's what we're doing now. Mm. Of course, it's really stupid. There's lots of what other things that we could do. We don't have to be destroying our future to stay alive. Mm. And I kind of, the other part of that really frustrates me is this kind of attitude that because something makes money, therefore it's all right. Mm. And I don't, this kind of morality, I don't know where it stops, because it seems that no matter who you talk to, they will turn around and say, oh, but it's worth, you know, so much to our economy. Well, I mean, we could be doing some really horrible things that make lots of money, I don't know, drugs or whatever, and we would never accept that argument that we'll supply all the drugs in the world because we'll make lots of money. You know, morally, it's wrong to do that, and we don't do it. So it's kind of strange that we have a double standard when it comes to other things that are destroying the planet, and we'll suddenly say, well, that's all right because it's good for the economy.
It's almost, we've become so entrenched in looking at our landscape as one way to think about seeing it in a different way. It's a paradigm shift for people. Like, could we actually see something else growing on our hills besides grass?
Yeah.
We've kind of idealised that since European history, this grassed area.
So it's election year, and as you said, the Greens probably have the best environmental policy. But are there any other political parties? Have you made a study of their attitude towards environmental matters?
No, but I have some awareness of what people are up to, and I do talk to some of the parties, and I'm involved with a group that hopefully is going to put out a list of Forest and Bird have done it before. A list of questions around environmental issues to give to the different parties, and I'm sure that someone will do that in the build up to the election, and we can all see where they stand on a bunch of issues. I guess I'm kind of frustrated with the Labor Party because it's coming up to a couple of years ago now. I talked to most of the caucus about freshwater issues, and I spent a lot of my time explaining what was going on, and I there was a lot of interest and a lot of yes, we need to do something about it. And I thought, and I walked away thinking, well, you know, this is really good. This is going to change things. Mm. And it was within a few weeks that the Labor Party joined with the National Party to sign off on allowing the pulp mill in Kawerau to keep discharging into the Kawerau River. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a disgusting discharge that's been going on forever, for decades, and they allowed it to continue because it employs a whole bunch of people, I guess, and they didn't want to be involved in, you know, these big companies just blackmail the community by saying, well, if you make us clean up our discharge, then we'll just go somewhere else. We see that happening all the time. So I was just so disappointed to see the Labor Party just back down on everything they'd said for this one-off case and sign away this consent to keep on doing it for another 25 years after having said all of those things about the river. So, you know, I guess that's the frustration with dealing with politicians, isn't
exactly.
it? They'll say one thing and then do something else.
Except for Donald Trump, of course. He says he's going to build a wall, and he's building a wall.
I
was disappointed. Well, I'm not sure if I was what the word is exactly, but when Bill English said that there's no way he would work with the Greens, I thought,
It's sad, isn't it? It's kind of an ideological stance that they start off with, and that means that, you know, if they're going to, this is the trouble with party politics, I suppose, all the politicking that goes on, and they forget what their real job is because they get so caught up in that, and their real job should be looking after the people of New Zealand and not playing their games.
So what would you like to see, Mike, like if we gave you a blank slate and said you're in charge, what would you like to see starting to have happen?
Well, definitely, I want to see agriculture pay some more of its externalities, and it needs to happen globally as well, but you know, part of this work that I'm doing where I'm pulling this data together, if you look at the European Union, and again looking at this nitrate issue because it's recognised there as a huge issue and they have done something about reducing it over there, but if you add up the cost of the climate change that's happening because of nitrogen, some of the health costs around it and the pollution costs of nitrogen, and you do the sums, and then they've done the sums on how much extra revenue comes from using nitrogen fertilizer, and the costs are almost exactly double the gain from using nitrogen fertilizer, artificial nitrogen fertilizer. So that's a good, clear example for the whole European Union, where if they paid the true cost of the impacts of nitrogen, then they wouldn't use nitrogen fertilizer because it costs the country twice what they gain from it. There's many studies looking at externalities of the impacts of agriculture that show that if the industry had to pay their costs, then they wouldn't be doing what they're doing now. So if the costs, when you add them up, of animal agriculture, and if they were paying anywhere near the cost to society, then they would be moving away from it and moving into much less harmful,
more efficient ways
of and then, so, you know, I mean, the trouble is, though, and I've already seen this, I mean, I'm working in this environmental reference group with Landcorp, and we're keen at looking at places where the impacts of agriculture could be ameliorated by getting away from livestock. So Southland's a good example, where you have these really, really wet winters and you have cows slushing around and they're up to their middles in the wintertime when it's really wet and doing huge damage to waterways and to the land and to everything. So we did some sums there, a few of the economists did, and looked at what it would cost. Crops grow really well down there, and it's got a great history of growing oats and wheat down there. So what if we cut out the cows and we just grew crops and made the milk directly from the plants, so plant-based milk, so oat milk or like that kind of thing. And it turned out to be hugely more efficient. There was more of everything, whether you looked at protein, calories, water use was thousands of times less, greenhouse gas emissions were thousands of times less. It was a win-win. It was clearly a much better idea to make milk out of plant material than it is to have the cows in there because of that system. But then, like the cadmium issue, and that was another issue you'd have to look at, Southland's not so bad for cadmium because it hasn't been intensified for so long. But one thing that you do need to make milk out of plant material is you need nice, clean water. Mm. We looked at the figures for some of the boars down there, and just in a couple of decades, they've gone from very low levels of nitrogen to very high levels, past the World Health Organization limit for the amount of nitrogen in waters. Already, you've shut the door on being able to make that land use change there, because you've already contaminated the groundwater there to the point that you can't use it to make plant-based milk. You possibly can go deeper down to the bores and the aquifers that haven't been impacted yet. But like the cadmium, the nitrogen pollution of the waterways is a bad enough issue for now, in that, you know, the examples like I'm sure you've heard about in South Canterbury, where mothers with young babies or pregnant mothers have to buy bottled water because their water supply from the shallow bores there exceeds the World Health Organization nitrogen levels. And the same in the shallow bores down south. So you can't set out your milk plant because the water's too dirty to use, because what you were doing before, the dairy milk process, has contaminated the groundwater.
And the sales of bottled water are starting to go up because people can get it pretty much for free from the few streams that are left.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you just same with the Havelock water crisis. I mean, what you do is just make it ideal for the Coca-Cola and the other companies that are making money by having our water for free and selling it back to us.
Speaking of the Havelock North situation, what's your take on where that's got to at the moment? It's come out that it's sheep manure that's got into the...
I'm sure that matches up because the original study said it was ruminant. Yeah, I'm a bit concerned that people are going to, and certainly this big inquiry, that I don't know that there's a huge amount of independent science there. They're relying on the scientists from the two councils involved to come up with their answer on what happened. I was hoping, and I said this right from the start, that the inquiry would be able to take in much bigger, broader scale issues, because it's an isolated case in that so many people were sick, but it's not isolated in that there's many, many incidences of water being contaminated by livestock, and mostly it's been dairy, and Canterbury's the biggest example because that's where that's the biggest number of animals that there are around. So, you know, if it does, they finish off the inquiry and then go, well, it was sheep that's done it, then people might tend to not associate it with the bigger issue, which is the intensification, just because this one time that lots of people got infected wasn't from dairy.
Just another couple of things I want to bring up with you. One is about the news that I think shocked many people last year, that there were companies taking our own water, bottling it for free and selling it overseas for a profit. Are you up to date with any developments on this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just under our legislation, then the regional councils are not able to take money for the water. So it's something that has to be done at, you know, has to be legislated by central government. The reason, and I mean, I don't know that I can prove this, but the accepted reason why the politicians keep saying that nobody owns water, and if nobody owns water, then that means that anybody can have it and we can't charge them for it, is because of treaty issues. They don't want to say who owns water or that somebody owns water, because under the Treaty of Waitangi, then I think it's quite clear that Māori own water in this country, and they never ceded the right to that. So we've got this input, you know, successive governments have not wanted to face this issue, so they keep avoiding it by this mantra of nobody owns water, nobody owns water. You know, nobody owns water, but millions and millions of dollars change hands. There's a website that you can look up called Hydro Trader in Canterbury. It's like a stock exchange for water, and huge amounts of money change hands over the rights to water in Canterbury. But if you want to bottle water and sell it overseas or in New Zealand, then all you do is pay this kind of just a one-off fee. It's just it's a booking fee, basically, to pay for the consent, and then away you go, and your water's free from there on. Huge injustice for the New Zealanders.
And they're certainly not getting the water from my local streams.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, it's just... The bottling companies can afford to pay to drill down deep to get the deep water that we haven't contaminated. Whereas the poor people, and this is a real, you know, environmental justice issue, especially in Canterbury, lots of people, including friends of mine, drink water from shallow bores, and it's contaminated with nitrogen and with pesticides and other things from all kinds of activities in the past. And so it's a real issue of equality as well.
Just as a final question, do you think that we could be fighting wars over water in the future?
Yeah, I am sure we will be. I mean, we can do without lots of things, but we can't do without water. And clean water, so I'm sure it'll be a huge issue.
Something else has just come to my head. What about them and us? You've covered that, have you, so far? You mentioned that you were working on something called Them and Us.
So what I meant by them or us is, when it comes to livestock and mainly ruminants, cattle, is it's them or us for the future. If we're going to survive, and I mean civilization, much longer in the century, then one or other of us is going to have to cut our numbers severely, because the amount of pollution, and I went through some of those numbers, but the greenhouse gas emissions, particularly from livestock, means that if we're going to continue, and all of the indices are showing that more and more meat is being eaten, if we continue on that trajectory, then we're all going to be gone, basically. Yeah. So one of us has to go. So it's either if we want to have more humans, then we have to get rid of the livestock. If we want to have more livestock, then we have to cut down on humans. So people have to make that choice.
Well, we're very grateful to you, Mike. You're such an outspoken voice for the environment, and we vegans just love you. You know that, don't you?
You know, I mean, I'm not a vegan, and I definitely am a vegetarian, but you know, it doesn't come from there with this.
No,
it just comes from science. It's just logic. We don't have any choice in the matter.
Yes.
That's the way we have to go.
Yeah, understand. All right, Mike, take care. We'll talk again, hopefully.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Our thanks to Dr. Mike Joy. Mike's really a national treasure as far as I'm concerned. There's another person advocating a move away from animal agriculture, and that's Herald columnist Rachel Stewart. I don't know if you've seen her columns, and they're really good value too. People like Mike and Rachel are going against the mainstream, but they're making really good calls, and we should be listening to them. Actually, we recorded this interview with Mike before the government announcement last week, that they plan to make 90% of New Zealand's rivers and lakes swimmable by 2040. And you may be aware that Mike's response was that the government was trying to pull a Swiftie on the New Zealand people, and it really amounts to them shifting the baseline. So what would have required a sign to be put up as a warning a number of years ago is now considered a swimmable river. And with the acceptable fecal content rate, 1 in 20 people will still stand a chance to get sick. So if you're following it, Environment Minister has defended the government's policy in the wake of the criticism from Mike and the Greens, and that's all online if you want to read about it. I'd like to end today's broadcast with two songs from a wonderful young singer-songwriter called Stephanie Stephen. Now, Steph and her partner travel around our beautiful country in their motorhome. They play a lot of tennis, and they have time to reflect, too, on the state of the world, and Steph writes songs about it. One of the songs that she has written, which we're playing, The Door, recently reached the top 15 in the iCharts in the USA. We're going to play first up Steph's song The World Is Dying, which she was inspired to write when she saw the documentary An Inconvenient Truth, which is, of course, about climate change. So you can hear more of Stephanie's songs at her website, stephaniestephen.wixsite.com. So that's stephaniestephen.wixsite.com. Go well, everyone. See you next week.
The world is dying. It's melting the ice. The world is dying right in front of your eyes. Why are we so blind to see and turn away? The world is dying today. Billions are wasted on weapons and war, and nobody really knows what they're fighting for. Shooting and killing seems to be the game to play. The world is dying today.
If you look at the 10 hottest years ever measured, they've all occurred in the last 14 years. And hottest of all was 2000. possible that we should prepare against other threats besides terrorists? Our ability to live is what is at stake.
The world is dying. Goodbye, paradise. The world is crying. And we cover our eyes. Oh, why are we so blind to see and turn away? The world is dying today.
The biggest crisis in the history of this country. Early this morning, Hurricane Katrina slammed into New Orleans. The Arctic is experiencing faster melting. If this were to go, sea level worldwide would go up 20 feet. This is what would happen in Florida. Around Shanghai, home to 40 million people. The area around Calcutta, 60 million. Here's Manhattan. The World Trade Center Memorial would be underwater.
Tsunamis and hurricanes are a Mother Earth sign that nature is battling the world's biggest crime. Plagues and pollution caused by the human disease. It's no surprise that the world demands peace.
Keep on searching.
Keep on.
touch it.